To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
I'm Don Moore, and you're listening to Two Dimension, the comic book podcast with no direction. And all I can see is a question: how the goop in your head gives rise to thoughts and ideas. They can only apply to Mr.
Al.
And the true driving force of the world can only be...
Hey, everybody, it's Rook.
Yeah, it's... I don't know if I need to introduce, but Rook is one of the core four, although he's only been on a handful of episodes.
we're almost at 200, and I've been on like 20 episodes.
That's what Dallas said when I told him. I said, Yeah, says, we're getting close to 200. He goes, yeah, Rook's only been on 10 of them.
Huh? Well,
no, he's been on more than that. And always good ones. Always good ones. Before we get started, I want to say a few things. We talked about the Doom Patrol a few episodes ago, Dallas and Al and myself.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to take full credit for this. Al, and I have no idea why, you brought up Ted McKeever.
Well, because we were talking about Eddie Curran and stuff.
Yeah, but we were talking about Doom Patrol, and we were talking about Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol, and you mentioned the artist doing Grant Morrison's work. Richard Case. And then you started talking about Ted McKeever, and then we talked about Ted McKeever's work, which I haven't read, but I liked it. I just never picked it up. So when I'm putting and that was all said, I listened to the episodes, so when I put the show notes together, I just put Ted McKeever's work. But in the introduction of the show, I typed, and we talked about Ted McKeever, and I just wrote parentheses, who has never worked on Doom Patrol, because I didn't know.
Is that how that happened?
It was my fault. Somebody named T, T commented.
T, quote unquote.
Well, that's his internet name.
Mr. T.
It was
Mr. T.
Well, just T. Just okay. T. Don't change the guy.
All right.
That's Mr. T. This is T.
Okay.
But T, thank you very much, wrote us a comment, called me out nicely, and said, I don't know why you would attest to that when he obviously did work on it. Well, I didn't know, and I thought, why did Al bring this up? Did you know he worked on Doom Patrol?
No, I didn't. You know, but Grant Morrison didn't write those issues. I just felt like that was like from an old show. It's like, but Grant Morrison didn't do those shows, write those. Some other person wrote that.
But then, you know,
and I was out of the I would get the Grant Morrison ones when I was working the comic shop. But when I left, I didn't get them anymore. And the Ted McKeever ones in late 94 to 95. I don't think I was getting comics around that time, so therefore I never saw them.
Oh, I got you. Well, like I said, after he wrote that, I sent the information to Al, and Al said, "Let me look it up." Oh yeah, he did work on it. So you know, I did post it, you know, on the comments, and then T nicely wrote back and told us what issues he worked on. Now it made me interested in reading the Doom Patrol that he did, and also I want to read Plastic Forks and Eddie Current. And,
well,
you know,
if I have some in my ready-to-go bin, I'll like throw them at you.
So but that was all my mistake. It wasn't the other guy's mistake. T, thank you very much for taking the time to correct that, and I did correct it in the show notes.
Remember a show called Mr. T and Tina?
Yeah,
Mr. T and Tina.
Yes,
it was. Please tell me it's Mr. T and Tina Turner.
No. This is when Tina Turner was gone. She was a has-been.
Okay.
This is in the late 70s. And it's Pat Morita.
And
before
Tina.
He did The Karate Kid, before he was on Happy Days.
Was it before he was Arnold on Happy Days?
Yeah.
It was before okay.
And before Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah, because he was an inventor.
Yeah.
And he was Japanese, in traditional Japanese. I don't know where they lived, if it was New York or something, but they lived in like a nice apartment. And he had a whole family, and all the ladies wore, kimonos, and they were all really Japanese. And Tina.
I got to Google this.
Tina was like this, to me, kind of an awkward, homely, redheaded girl that's kind of dorky.
I don't remember who the actress was.
I don't know the actress, but I just remember her. And then at one point, I think it was the guy's wife or oldest daughter, she wanted to be American. And so Tina took her out shopping. That's the one episode I remember. Took her out shopping and came back. And, you know, she was dressed as a 70s girl. She had like a cabbie hat, you know, and the gaucho pants that were popular at the time. And Mr. T didn't like it. And she goes, I go back to plain old in kimono. You know, and then she was a traditional Japanese. And my mom's like, well, she looked cute like that. And I remember Tina was upset at Mr. T, and she was making, I guess she was their housekeeper, but she was making their dinner, and she says, Mr. T, so she was so excited about being American, she wanted to buy a CB radio, which is a joke, because CB radios were made in Japan, you know, but, yeah, it was like a summer replacement show, it wasn't on very long. How do you even remember that show?
I just remember the name, and I remember that Pat Morita was in it. I don't remember ever watching one, but I'm so glad that you did, because you have such a great pop culture memory that you remember this stuff, and you can, like, complete the thought for me. You know what I mean?
Here's the amazing part. This thing aired for 5 whole episodes.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was just a few
five
episodes.
It was a spinoff from Welcome Back, Kotter. In 1976.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's what it's saying.
Also, is the girl from Welcome Back, Kotter in it, the redhead, Deborah, whatever her name
no,
is?
No, I don't think that was her.
Oh, okay, all right.
But it was somebody like her, but her hair was a little shorter.
Oh, okay. I just remember the name. I remember Pat Morita. I mean, I love obscure.
And I remember one episode ended with him. He had some type of anti-gravity pack, and... You know, it was 70s technology, but it showed him in the apartment by himself kind of floating around.
Wait, I got this beautiful picture that I just saw of that I'm pretty sure this is it.
Which we'll use on the show.
Here we go. Is that the picture of him in the anti-gravity pack?
Yeah, and that's the one.
Oh, that's awesome.
He's in an old 70s full head helmet. He's got what can only be described as like a silver toaster and a pair of lightsabers on his sides.
Awesome, yeah. Man. That's what the 70s were all about. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know who this girl is, but...
That was before Star Wars came out, too.
Yeah. Oh, I know who this actress is. I can't remember her name. I've seen her in a lot of things. Yeah, no, it wasn't the girl from the Sweat Hog. It was a different actress. Yeah.
I don't know how that tied into Welcome Back, Kotter.
They'd say it was a spinoff.
Well, I believe you. I just didn't know.
Well, you know, spinoffs back then was like, you know, Mr. Kotter may have, like, walked into, like, Pat Morita's restaurant and it became a spinoff the next time. And, but usually they meant one of the characters went off.
Looks like Travolta's character was on the show.
I just remember, I never watched an entire episode. I remember the one where the one woman was wanting to be American, but I didn't see what I described was all I watched and I walked away. One time I walked in and I showed him with the anti-gravity thing at the end. I saw parts of it, but I just remember it was only on, like you said, 5 episodes. I knew it was like a summer replacement thing, and it just lasted.
Speaking of spinoff shows, we all know that Mork and Mindy was a spinoff of Happy Days.
Yeah,
right.
Now, I did see when Mork was on that one.
Right.
I do remember that.
Yeah, but oh my God, the other day on Antenna TV, they played an episode where Mork meets Raquel Welch as a space alien.
Oh my God!
I almost lost it right there.
Wait, Raquel Welch was a space alien.
Yeah,
as well?
And she was hardly wearing anything either. You know, she was like an alien from another planet of women or something, and she wanted to get Mork for something. I don't know if he was gonna mess around. And it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. It was totally, you know, awe inspiring. But yeah, that's what spinoffs used to be. I don't know how that was a spinoff from Welcome Back, Kotter, we'll find out when we research it after the show, after I mentioned Mr. T and Tina.
Mr. T and Tina. See, all the things you missed, Rook, by not being born in the
70s. Yeah, tangent.
Oh, you know why this show bombed? It went up against the time slot for Bob Newhart's show.
Oh.
Yeah, no wonder it bombed.
Bob Newhart, that's a great show.
That was a great show.
Yeah.
Still is
when
I watch a rerun.
Oh, yeah, that's a classic.
All right, well, going down the list of things... I also want to thank James Perry. We got I got an email through the site. Actually, inadvertently, he tried to contact us, but he wasn't on the Facebook group, and he said, "You guys don't have any contact information." Well, thanks to you, James, I did add that on the page. There's a contact us. You can contact us through the email. I also have the Facebook page and the Facebook group information. I also have if you've done a comic and want to submit it, there's a button you can send to us. Please send it to it, and we can talk about it. And also, if you're a musician or band and you like your music played on our music spotlight, this is, we have a link to that you can send it to. And we do appreciate it because we're running out of music.
No, we'll never run out of music. But we would like to get other music.
I like to play...
Obscure.
Yeah.
I'm going to a house show tonight. Maybe I'll get some music from those guys.
I really love playing local musicians. And when I say local musicians, it's not just the area we live in. If you're on the planet Earth, you're a local musician.
Okay.
But we've even played some big name bands that either aren't well known here in the United States. They may be well known in another country. Or sometimes, a lot of times, I was playing bands that maybe were well known before Rook was born. But people don't seem to remember. And so we like to spread it out. It's an internet show. It's a world community. And anyway, James Perry sent us some books to talk about. Thank you very much, James. So we're slowly going through that in a future episode with the four of us on. Dallas is wanting to talk about one of the X-Men trades that you sent. He's read it. He's got me to read it. And I think Rook said he's already read it. But we're all going to go over that and check. But thank you very much, James. And James sent...
What did he send?
Whoa.
A Smithsonian book of comic book comics. And it's kind of funny. I saw this book. Somebody gave me years ago another Smithsonian book about newspaper comic strips. I think you may have it, Al.
I think I have that one.
And but the newspaper comics, it's a taller version, you know. And that book was incredible because it's got like old Gasoline Alley. You know, comic strips when Frank King did it. And it's almost like reading an abstract book. I remember I brought it to work and people were like, I didn't expect Gasoline Alley because it turned into a, you know, a real old-fashioned pedestrian strip, but the old ones were not. That's where I discovered that strip, White Boy, by Garrett Price. It was a kid in a coonskin hat that was living with the Indians. And I'd seen that Nemo magazine that Fantagraphics put out, but they were black and white reprints. And they were okay, but when you see them in color, it's just flabbergasting. What Rook is looking at is the Little Lulu strips. It's got several of those by John Stanley, which is... I'd read those as a kid, but when I read it in this book, I was really staggered. I had the newspaper strips, and a friend of mine showed me this one, so he lent it to me, but it's got all kinds of comics. It's got kids' comics. It's got superhero comics in it. The reproduction, you can see they just shot the pages on it. They're kind of muddy a little bit.
Oh, they're taking from the
original. They're taken from the very originals.
Yeah, so it's got the spirit. But it's what I like about this book is, it's got some Harvey Kurtzman on EC, you know, war stories.
Yes, it does. Woof.
But what I like is it's not a narrow selection. It's like a wide selection. And that's what I think we all agree on. We like a wide selection of comics, not just certain things, because it's the whole world.
Wallywood Mad story in here.
Yeah, it's terrific. But when my friend lent it to me, I hate to be a jerk, but I was really wishing I had it. And now James sent it, and I think Al's got it. And I'm praying to God that Rook doesn't say he wants it because I may have to give it up. But.
Oh, it's a cool book. It's definitely
well,
awesome.
Well, James, this is Alan. I would like to say that there was this EC book back in the... that I really wanted, but it was way too much money. I'm just kidding.
But, you know what it reminds me of is... remember the when we all went to the bookstore one time? And I
Oh, Wilson's?
Yeah. Here we go. Here's the book. Yeah, remember I ended up
with
this
thing. Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah.
Yeah, the graphic comics and graphic novels, a history.
Yeah, this is one I've never seen.
And
yeah, it is. It's got Little Nemo, but it's got it even starts way back.
Yeah, but the book he sent is it shows much more of the comic where that one talks about the history of it. So I really like his because it's
well, this one even goes into like it has Dan Dare and it has old newspaper strips way back, and then it goes into the all it's you know even has Underground. I've never seen this book. Yeah. Wow, it's got all the Trina Robbins.
Yeah,
stuff
it's
too,
a really cool book. It's a really good read too.
I forgot you got this at Wilson's.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I spent way too much money that day at Wilson's.
I remember Dallas and Al and myself have been to Wilson's. Rook had never been there, so one day Rook and his son came with us, and Dallas pulled me aside and says, "You know, I'm kind of afraid maybe we built Wilson's up too much, and Rook's going to be disappointed." So I was happy when Rook was walking around. with an armload of comics, and then he puts them back and gets an armload of books. He changed it like three times. You couldn't make up your mind.
At one point, I think I probably had over $300 worth of stuff. that was back a few years ago when financially we weren't even doing that great. And also, I was sitting there and I'm trying to add it all up in my head, and I'm going, okay, so I just won't pay the mortgage this month. That's all.
Oh, geez. You're one of us. You're one of us.
Oh, man.
But, okay, and that's, and thank you very much, James, for sending that. And he's from San Antonio, Texas. And even though it's a different part of Texas than I'm from, you're still my brother. Anyway, one other thing. You mentioned you were reading Doom Force last time we were all together. Now, have you finished it?
I forgot. I went on to it, but I will for the next show. I promise I will do it for the next
show.
One
thing...
I completely forgot.
After you mentioned that, I looked up some images and put on the blog. Have you read Doom Force, Rick?
Doom Force...
It's like a takeoff on the Doom Patrol and X-Force. It's like done in a...
Grant Morrison.
It was done in a Liefeld style back in the
70s. Yeah, I read some parts of it,
And a lot of different people. Walt Simonson worked on it.
Walt Simonson, Richard Case worked
on it. Yeah, a bunch of them. And it was...
McKeever, I believe.
I guess it's basically they were doing the Doom Patrol if it was an Image book way back when it started.
Yeah.
And like I said, I never really read any of those Image books back in the day, but you couldn't not see them. And I was looking through. I kind of enjoyed myself just gathering up the images. It looked fun. How far did you get on it?
I probably read like the first third of it or whatever, and then I stopped for whatever reason. I don't know. I had to go somewhere or do something, and I forgot. But I will finish it. But I do remember what I do remember from it. It's like a basically like it's almost like a snark. They're snarking on. Liefeld and Image, and they're also turning it into they're basically saying, oh, what if Image decided to do the Doom Patrol? This is what it's going to look like.
I really kind of took it as like a snarky, like you guys are doing this, we're just going to take it and twist it a little bit.
One character just like he's like, all I can do is turn into a big tree or something like that.
Silly stuff. You can say take off on it stuff, but they put the work into it, so
It looks just like
Book. They had to research and put it. I mean, some of those pages, there's one 2-page spread which will be on the blog that I thought, wow, now I kind of want to read it. You know,
I'll bring it. I just got to remind me.
It was fun.
Know, I've got like, I've been, you know, going through stuff or whatever. But yeah, it was funny because I just found it in a box looking through books that I brought for you and all that and Don and them. And I was like, oh, what's this? This looks like it's funny. And I looked through it and I went like, I got to put this on the side to talk
of
about.
Random stuff that I found. I was telling you guys how, when you got here, that I've been working on redoing the cabinet painting and stuff like that. Check these out. These are kind of fun. Those are nothing, but here we go. Look at these. These are some cards that were inside of a box that my mother-in-law
gave. He's got the Batman cards.
Oh my!
My mother-in-law gave me.
These look like they're like Robert Crumb, dude. It's not.
He's got the old Batman cards.
Check this out. They look kind of like Crumb. I don't know if they are.
Here's a couple more of them. Yeah, these were all buried inside the box of the collections that my mother-in-law had given me.
Yeah, these are Robert Crumb.
Oh no! Check this out, dude. These are Outer Limits cards too, right here. The Subterraneans, The Escape.
The Outer Limits was an old black and white.
I know what the Outer Limits are. Really? Seriously? Give me a break
Holy
here.
Holy moly. Oh, dude. These are awesomeness.
Yeah. Okay. I thought you guys might get a kick out of this.
No, the Batman card I'm seeing, what was odd was when the TV show came out, Batman was everywhere. They had Batman bubblegum cards, which is this where this is from. Who painted these?
Yeah, these are Outer Limits. Those are painted by Bob Powell did the layouts on them, and Norman Saunders painted them.
No,
these are awesome, dude.
Bob Powell, he was one of Will Eisner's cartoonists back in the quality days.
Yeah, he did a lot of work on his own.
And he did a lot of horror work. He's one of Al's favorite, and Al has shown me work. He's turned into one of mine. But those Batman cards, I had some packs when I was five, whenever at the convenience store.
Cards?
Yeah.
Here, you want to see something crazy? Here you go. Here you go.
An unopened
Star Trek collector's card packet. So, yeah, some old garbage.
You want me to open it for you?
No. You leave that alone.
But those Batman cards,
there's some wild ass stuff in her collection.
I think people are really trying to find some of those.
That's crazy.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that.
Horror cards.
Just drop a bunch of stuff.
These are like creature feature cards. Look at this Lost in Space cards.
So who had these, Rook?
This all was in years ago. I don't know if you guys remember.
Green Hornet cards.
Several years ago.
Green Hornet.
I went up to North Florida to go visit some family, and my father-in-law's new wife. Okay, follow along here. She was an old collector.
Yeah. These are neat.
This is where a lot of the horror comics that I have you going through and everything. You know, I've got Al going through a bunch of the old horror comics and stuff that I got sitting around here.
Oh,
there you go,
neat.
Some old Tales from the Crypt cards as well.
I got a set of those. Yeah.
But yeah, she had all this different stuff in boxes, and I guess one of her nephews at one point like went into where she had it all stored up and kind of like ravaged his way through it all and like picked his way through, and like when she got back up there, she ate him up and told him, she's like, I want my crap back.
Oh, man,
you know, get my stuff back to me now. And this was the remnants of it. This was what was left.
So, oh, they got Ghost Rider cards.
Those were mine, actually.
Oh,
I bought an entire box of the Ghost Rider cards when they came out. Oh yeah, there's like a stack of.
I remember you got the comic collection because you had some horror comics, you had cartoons comics, which I had a big collection of, and you had some Harvey, like Hot Stuff.
There's a Hot Stuff somewhere in those drawers next to us and everything.
And you had Swamp Thing, I think.
The Swamp Thing run. I don't even know how big the Swamp Thing run is because I still haven't properly cataloged it yet. But yeah, there's a huge, huge run of Swamp Thing.
I never knew there were color out of limits cards. I've only seen the black and white ones. These are wild.
Yeah, it was a really varied collection, which I like.
These are from 64, by the way.
Wow.
Yeah, there's some crazy stuff in these.
It is. It's nice.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but the Batman card, like I said, doing the show, looking them up.
Oh, and by the
way, they're completely forgotten cards, and they were bizarre when
you
were a
kid. I have a reprint set of those that like I got in the 90s.
Really?
I reprint the whole set. By the way, I was at a Dollar Tree the other day. They had wacky packages, but they're baseball themed, like with the baseball teams or whatever. But I almost bought a pack, and I was like, nah, maybe I'll get them next time or whatever. They made a new set of wacky packages, which is cool.
You know, Harvey Kurtzman was involved in those when they started.
Art
Spiegelman and what was that? I forgot the guy's name. Jay. He was another underground comic cartoonist.
Jay Lynch.
Yeah, Jay Lynch. They were the ones that started
John Pound.
And all the ones that we used to get in the 70s, early 70s, they worked on.
Yeah, John Pound, people like that, yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't know Harvey Kurtzman was involved.
I didn't know he
Art
was involved.
Spiegelman,
I knew those guys were, but I didn't know.
And Jay Lynch.
Was. I know who he was.
They were from Topps. And I remember I was reading about Howard Cruz in the 80s. He was doing a lot of stuff for Topps. And he says, hey, I'm working. And I remember when Topps, I guess it was in the late 80s or early 90s. I think the early 90s. Comics Journal posted about Topps that they weren't going to be doing all that novelty stuff anymore. And somebody had said that Topps was a gold mine for freelancers. A lot of cartoonists we love worked on this stuff. I never knew that because it was always uncredited.
Yeah, because I forgot to bring it. Speaking of Topps, Joss got me this book for Christmas. It's a book about Bazooka Bubblegum. And
yeah.
It's like a small
no
Bazooka Bubblegum book. I forgot to bring it. I'll bring it in next
time. Tell me it's like just bigger than the size
like
of
that.
The strips
it's,
that used to come
yeah,
in the
it's just and it's got the strips.
Oh, that's
some of the
awesome.
Strips inside. It's even got in the back like a little pack of cards which are sealed or whatever. It says a whole history of Bazooka cards.
You
got to
bring that.
Yeah, I'll bring it in.
That
I
was
forgot,
like my favorite thing when I was a kid was to go to the store and grab a pack of Bazooka Bubblegum
with
the little comic
book
strips.
In it and all.
Yeah, it is fun. It is fun. Even if the comics were really bad, but
yeah, they're fun, you know. Yeah, they're not rocket science, but they're kind of cool or whatever. But at home, I've got a box of cards. You remember in the 90s, there was an explosion of cards. All these, like, you know, heroes of, you know, baseball or, you know, heroes of the blues and all that. And I was working in a store, and I was buying up all of them. So I got, like, all sorts of weird sets of cards, like Addams Family. I got a set of, like, Night of Living Dead cards autographed by George Romero and the other guy. I got a set of Dr. Paul Bearer cards autographed by Dr. Paul Bearer.
I was just talking about that the other day, but Dr. Paul Bearer.
You used to watch that guy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like Saturday mornings as a kid, it was, you know.
Creature feature.
It was Saturday morning cartoons, so you got up at like... You know, it's not like being a kid today. You got up at the crack of dawn on Saturday morning so you could watch your Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah.
And then by like 11 o'clock, cartoons were over and it was time for like Dr. Paul Bearer.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And a horrible movie. Yeah, a really horrible movie.
Some wretched, horrible, stupid movie. But it was gold. It was absolute gold.
And then you would have some goofy product you would make, like, whatever. Sominex for mummies.
Lysaroni.
Yeah, Lysaroni. Don's not that big of a fan, but I mean, I have some copies of the shows, and yeah, they're fun.
We moved here in 87, and he was on television then. And when I first saw him, I was fascinated. The makeup, he just looked horrifying.
He had a glass eye.
Did he really?
Yeah, a friend of mine, a guy that used to come to the comic shop that I worked with, came up here to do a carnival, and for fun, he used to like to pop it out. You know, I was like, hey, wow.
The makeup he had, he looked like he was almost dead. And it was Dr. Paul Bearer, which was a good name, but you saw him, and I was like, oh man, that's horrifying. And I used to watch the movie, and he'd come on, but.
He's corny.
Yeah, he's corny, yeah. And he just got to be too much because he'd always talk like this, and he'd just drone on, and he wouldn't shut up. I'm like, you know, dude, you don't really need to talk this much, but when did he go off the air?
When he died, 95. He died.
Yeah, so he was still...
Actually, if I remember it right, he died, and his new wife at the time had the rights to everything, Paul Bearer.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And so the son... Who looks just like him,
by the way. Guy that does shows every once in a while, Paul Bearer Jr., second.
Yes, his son, I think.
Some relation or something. I don't even know if it's his son. I think it's like a fan, but it could be related.
No, if I remember right, it's the son from his first marriage.
Oh, one is doing his?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who's doing the Dr. Paul Bearer thing now.
He does it occasionally, like around Halloween or something.
It was a good show, though, because like it started out, and they'd have him superimposed and all these other things. They'd have like a parade from the 60s in the back of a Cadillac waving at the parade in New York, and they'd have all the Wolfman and stuff walking with him. It was fun. I mean, it was a neat show, and it was neat production.
And he was like an early guy from, I think he was in the 60s, maybe started in the 60s, and he would do like appearances at malls and sign autographs or whatever. I mean, it was like old Americana stuff. It's like, but yeah, he passed away in 95, and then that was it. You know, he's still doing them every week. It was still popular.
Well, there's guys, Rook's age, you know, I've worked with, and they'd always talk about it. I said, I couldn't wait to watch it on Saturday. Well, that's fine. That's what it's for. But that ship kind of sailed for me when I moved here.
I
watched it, and I thought, like I said, the makeup was neat, the character, but...
If you grew up with those guys, it has like a kind of like a it's kind of comfort food, you know what I mean? But if you didn't, like you had Count Gregor, but you didn't see him that often, but you liked him when you saw him, you know? But, you know, if you watch them every Saturday, it's like, you know, yeah, I know they're corny, but they're supposed to be corny or whatever, you know? But I could see... Where my friend used to record, and even though these are all on, a lot of them are on YouTube now. You ever see Commander USA, the guy from on you? He was dressed like a superhero, and he lived underneath a mall, and he had his pal Lefty, was just like his left hand.
What is this from? Like,
you never saw Commander USA?
I never heard of it.
It was in like the 80s.
Did he have like a motorcycle that he came flying out from underneath the building lawn or something?
I might have had a motorcycle. I seem to remember something vague.
He had like about this.
He was dressed like a superhero. He had a mask painted on his face. He would go into his little, you know, underground mall, and he would have like this psychotronic screen that he would like put like a, you know, one of those, like, you know, those pipes that you go like and he would open up, and he would show two movies like on Saturday afternoon. You know, that was another one of those guys that was like around towards the tail end of everything.
Yeah,
but
Commander USA's groovy movies.
Yeah, Commander's USA.
What
a lot of them
was
on USA. USA Network. Uh-huh. But a lot of them are on YouTube.
There you go.
Did you ever see that guy?
No.
But a bunch of them are on YouTube, and I'm watching them. And towards the end, he was playing stuff like Women in Prison movies.
Oh,
and I'm like, okay, that's kind of edited that
USA
hell.
USA used to show a lot of new stuff in
the
early 80s.
There's the old stuff, too, like Prime Time when it first started out.
Yeah, see, there was a period in the 80s from early 83 to 88 where I was in the military and I was away from television.
Yeah, you were away from, yeah.
But I remember 82, my brother and I watched USA at night because during the day they showed, they used to show football and drag racing. It was all sports.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, I mean, they had Night Flight. It was always wild Night movies and crazy. Bands. I love that stuff.
Night Flight was crazy. Night Flight would show movies, too. Like, yeah. They'd show weird movies.
There is a movie I wish I could find. My brother and I was watching on Night Flight. It was black and white. And it was about a girl that was, people were dropping off videotapes to her place. And then it showed her walking around. It looked like, I'm guessing, New York. But they had two different bands on the show, and in between all these scenes of people bringing the tapes, and she'd be sitting there with her towel, her hair in a towel, and she goes, drop the tapes and vanish. And
I remember punk then, rock theater, or New Wave theater.
Well, they'd play a band, and I, wow, that's pretty good. And they'd play a song, and then they'd switch back to her, and they had this flute music going in the background, you know, and she'd be doing something else with tapes, and I couldn't quite figure it out, and then it's another scene, and it was a different band. There was two bands juxtaposed between all this, and my brother, I'm like, wow, this is really amazing. And then, for some reason, he started playing guitar, and I forgot all about the movie, and I wish I could find it again, because it was wild. It was black and white, it was in 82, and it was on Night Flight. USA was a really bizarre show.
USA was a really interesting station, and then they got bought out by somebody more corporate, and they became just like what. I don't think I've watched that station in like 20 years, and I have no idea.
Sometimes I'll turn it and there'll be something on it, but yeah, it's not one I really follow much.
But they played some strange stuff back in the 80s, man, when they were starting out, like everything else, and when a new form starts out, they're experimenting. And they put, and then the corporate comes in and ruins.
It's like Sci-Fi used to be fantastic.
Sci-Fi Channel was awesome. I have old VHS of Sci-Fi Channel.
And now every single time I turn the damn thing on, it's like Super Alligator versus Cyber Monkey.
Come on,
I get it. You know, there's an old shtick to that, but you've beaten that horse to death with the stick.
Yeah, back then they used to show old B-movies and, like, you know, old like Outer Limits or Twilight Zone.
Well, yeah, and they used to show some films I didn't remember. There was a TV series called The Immortal.
The Immortal, with Christopher George.
I didn't know until
like
I saw it on Science. Yeah. But they treated that like a DVD because in between the commercials, they'd have writers from that show.
And stuff like that.
And they would talk about it with great enthusiasm. It was a good show.
One of their first originals, was it original Farscape? Was Farscape originally Sci-Fi? I don't know. But all I remember is what I originally started watching Sci-Fi Channel 4 was for Farscape.
Yeah, a lot of people,
I loved that series. That series was absolutely
Well, they did Stargate,
fantastic.
Too, didn't they?
They did do Stargate, too.
And that was popular.
But, Stargate was good. All the spin-offs of it, really good. I'm glad they finally ended it because it was getting a little shark, getting ready to jump the shark, really.
But didn't they also do Mystery Science Theater for a while, too?
They showed
it on comedy, but I think it went to Sci-Fi.
It would be on Sci-Fi, like, late at nights, I think.
Yeah.
Well, it was on Saturday afternoons, because my daughter used to watch it all the time.
That was on Comedy Central, wasn't it?
Comedy Central.
Yeah.
And then it moved to Sci-Fi after that.
I'm not sure which one we watched it on. It might have been Sci-Fi, but I just remember my daughter could not. She was little, and she could not wait to watch it.
She liked it.
But one time they showed a movie called Puma Man, and Donald Pleasance was in it. I can't remember the actor. And we were watching it, and then when he turned into Puma Man, had that really stupid costume, and a friend of mine came over. We were talking about it. And he says he watched it religiously, and I can't believe Donald Pleasance, whoever the other actor was, I can't believe they did that movie.
Donald Pleasance would do anything, man.
And then my daughter's like, it was good. You know, she was small.
I
said, then he shows up in that dumb super. It wasn't dumb, Dad.
Right.
It was neat.
Never argue with kids. They like what they like.
And you're right. It's what we're just talking about. If it hits you at a certain age, it's just all awesome.
Well, it's funny because there's a lot of things that I liked as a kid. Not everything, but a lot of things. And then I just grew out of. Yeah. And then, like, any once in a while, I'll see it again. I go, you know, it still holds up.
Yeah.
Some of it, not everything, but some of it does. Some cartoons do, some shows do, some don't. But
some of the remakes, though, that they're doing of different stuff is really killing me, though. Because there's something like 100-something different things that are being remade for 2017.
Oh, that's insane.
Yeah, that's disgusting. You know? Like, they finally redid Voltron in a way that I can... Voltron's being done by Netflix now. It's a Netflix original. And they're doing a fantastic job with it. But, like, they tried to reboot Voltron, like, two or three times, and it's been god-awful each time.
Yeah, I don't... I mean, is it done in America, or is it done in Japan and brought over here?
No, it's done for Netflix itself, the Netflix streaming.
Okay. I don't get it done on Netflix anymore,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, it's all cartoon. It's not, like, CG... Like, they did a completely 100% CG animated Voltron one time.
Yeah.
That was horrible. It was crap.
Well, Cartoon Networks does stuff like that too, don't they? Don't they do knockoffs of Justice, the other DC stuff?
Well, they're not knockoffs. They're Warner Brothers. They're DC.
That's
stuff.
Right. They're not knockoffs. They're the original. They do them in different styles. They do CG. And
I think they got a new Justice League show because Shane Gleins is working on it. I haven't seen it, but I've wanted to see it.
I know the new Teen Titans is horrible.
Well, see,
it's so campy and goofy and like. It's like watching baby programming.
That's what my daughter said. She liked the old Teen Titans Go, which was really funny.
See, that's the one I don't like, is Teen Titans Go. The new Teen Titans.
Oh, that's the new
Teen
one, Teen Titans Go. Yeah, the old Teen Titans. The one had the theme song by Puffy AmiYumi, the Japanese group.
Mm, yes. Yes,
and
that one was fantastic.
My daughter liked that show, but yeah, the new one's Teen Titans Go. But I heard some writer on Word Balloon talking about it that basically. It's the Teen Titans cartoon. It's the same creative team, I think, that's doing it. But basically what they did is just took out the adventure and just left in nothing but poop jokes.
Yeah, and, pretty much. You know, I mean, it is the most childish crap
I've ever watched. I watch it sometimes. You know, I'll turn the TV on, Cartoon Network's on. It's not my favorite. A lot of times I just say, okay, I'll turn it. But it's a popular show. Kids like it.
The only thing I can stand on Cartoon Network anymore is Robot Chicken.
That's Adult Swim.
There's a lot of... I love Adventure Time. I never stop loving that show.
They don't make it anymore, do they?
I think it's finishing. This is the last season. I have seen it. It's never on when I turn the TV
on. I hear everybody raves about Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty's a good show. I don't watch it all the time. But when I think it's on the weekends, I watch it.
Yeah.
It's sideways. It's really sideways. It's this kid named Rick, his grandfather, he calls Morty. And his grandfather is a crazy mad scientist who knows how to bend time and time travel. And basically, Rick and Morty get in these spaceships or these contraptions, and they go to these bizarre alien landscapes.
It kind of looks like Morty uses Rick as cannon fodder.
Absolutely. He's a terror. That's why he doesn't call him Granddad. He just calls him Morty. And the damage they do on that show, and basically, Rick's parents are normal parents. That doesn't really want them hanging out together. And Rick also has an older sister. And they do things like at one point they brought the dad with them. He insisted on coming. And they get to this place, all the people that work there, it's like a really nice resort. And the woman behind the counter, the alien behind the counter that has the woman's voice, is saying, oh, hello. And she knows his name. He goes, how do you know my name? And she's talking like, okay, come this way. They put him in this room full of other versions of him. And basically, Rick is like, why did you take Dad over there? Why does everybody know him? We're just getting him out of the way. And then the grandfather, Rick and Morty, go on these adventures. And all of a sudden, there's like 700 dads in this group. And at the very end, they're not sure which dad is which. Because some of the Rick and Mortys never came back and had to leave them there. I mean, it's just... it's weird stuff. And, some of the characters and the aliens, I mean, it's imaginative, but it doesn't stop. And, of course, it's one of those shows you're like, oh, God, they're going to destroy everything. And at one point, they froze the parents in time for a year. And Rick and Morty and, Rick's older sister were just on the planet with everybody frozen, like in a Twilight Zone. And finally, they decided they had to clean everything up, bring everything back before they started time up again. And by this time, the parents had trouble moving. They saw the house destroyed. And when they brought them back, the house and everything's back in order. And they're starting to yell, what are we yelling? Everything seems fine. But they had trouble moving because they haven't moved in like a year or 2 years.
You got like atrophy.
Yeah, it's wild. But there's some other shows, a regular show, which
I
guess...
Did you ever see this one? And it played for a while, but they pulled it. And it hasn't even been put out on DVD. It's called Minority Team.
I remember the ads for it. I didn't watch it, though.
I never heard of it.
Yeah, well, it was done in, like, kind of a Jack Kirby old Marvel superheroes style, like a cheapo kind of style, but it was borderline kind of offensive or whatever. Yeah, a lot of stereotypes in it.
Gee, no wonder with it. It was called Minority. Name, like, Minority Team.
And yeah. It was amazingly, like, wow, they're really getting away with some stuff here. And then they ended it, and it's never been out on DVD, so I guess they're like, I don't know, like a banish from, like, you know.
And somebody's sitting back in an office at Cartoon Network going, I can't believe I still got away with that
yeah,
one.
I got away with this one. Yeah.
No, there's a lot of shows. Steven Universe I watch. I like that one.
I tried that. I couldn't get into it.
I didn't at first. And later my daughter came home. This is when she was in school. She goes, Steven Universe is okay. If you watch it enough, it's neat. It's fun, it's bright, it's imaginative, but their whole point is accept who you are and understand everybody else. I mean, it's other stuff going on, but it builds and it adds, and it's neat.
Yeah. I know Samurai Jack's coming back for the final season.
Scott Connor, one of our listeners, hi Scott, he's thrilled to death about it.
Oh, I am too. I'm right there with you, Scott. I am so freaking happy. I still have the original Samurai Jack, like, movie premiere pilot.
Yeah.
I have it on DVD.
I do, too.
Oh, love it.
I got the first season on DVD, and I got that DVD for the pilot. Yeah, it was a neat show. Some episodes were better than others on it. But, yeah, that's good. If what I've seen, it looks like the old show. Sometimes they bring back the Powerpuff Girls or something. It's not quite the same, but this one...
Yeah, the Powerpuff Girls remake was weird. Or it wasn't a remake, but it was like a return. I don't know. It just something was missing. Something was a little off.
Well, it's like
one.
Teen Titans Go.
No,
you
Teen Titans Go is just horrible.
Did they stop? I'm sure they did. The one with Master Shake, you know, Aqua Teen
Hunger Force. Yeah,
that was an odd show. I don't know if I was. I don't know.
My daughter loved that one.
My wife hates that show. Like we'll be in bed at night, and like I'm trying to go to sleep, and she'll be watching Robot Chicken or something like that, and I can hear the music for Aqua Teen Startup, and I hear just, ugh, like, disgust. Pure
well,
disgust.
You know, Robot Chicken can be kind of offensive, too, sometimes. And I've watched one of them where it's like, that guy's getting away with some funny business here, but, you know, hey, whatever, man. It's on late at night. If it bothers you, just switch the channel.
That is a good show. It is a good show. Anyway, I hate to do it, guys, but it's time for a music break. See ya.
I woke up this morning, haunted by a dream of an honest man without a plan or a scheme. Can I be candid or stranded in someone else's life? I rushed to the bathroom, looked myself in the eye. The mirror was no clearer to help me see the sky. I woke from a dream into a dream of someone else's life. Hey, Mr. Postman, there's no forwarding address for the man who's been replaced by this disgraceful hot mess. My crystal ball is muddy, so the rest is anybody's best guess. Life is a mystery, a clue or two at best. And sometimes we play our cards too close to the vest. I guess I'm folding, sold into someone else's life. I'll tread water somehow. Long haul, quick fix, feet don't fail me now. Well, how did I get here? Living someone else's life. But those dreams of one day finding fortune and fame all on my own terms, not paying any fade into Monday in the din of dingy corporate shame. While I wasn't watching, I failed to see. I turned into who I pretended to be. The ruse has cost me. I'm lost in someone else's life. And when at last the fateful day does arise, and the whole tableau goes passing before my eyes, hey, something's wrong here. That's somebody else's life. I don't belong here. Driven to the edge and wedged into someone else's life.
You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
And that was Ed Wattell. He's a local artist in the St. Petersburg area. You've heard him before, and you're hearing him again. Anyway, now Rook's got something.
So, I'm at Yancey Street, as always, like I ever leave there.
Great store.
Yeah, isn't it? And both Brittany and Kayla are talking to me about this book, and they're like, you know, it's funny because, like, part of them was hesitating telling me about the book because it's a book called Sunstone. And it's, just to put it as easily as possible of a description, it's a lesbian BDSM book. So, but it's a love story. It really is. It's beautifully written. The art is absolutely gorgeous. But of course it works around some things that, you know, many people aren't exactly comfortable with. So they're funny as they're describing this book to me, and they're like, but then they just come right out and say it because they realize it's me. And I was like, I love this. Where is this book and where can I find this? Well, they now have all 5 volumes of it sitting at Yancey Street, and my wife for Valentine's Day bought me the first 2 volumes. I finished the first volume just this morning, and let me tell you, it is absolutely a fantastic read. It's being written from kind of a joint perspective of the 2 main characters. It's Allie and Lisa, and these are the 2 girls that fall in love, and it's all centered around a BDSM relationship, but it's done in a way that, you know, they're not doing like graphic, idiotic, stupid, you know, here's somebody tied up while spread eagle and, you know, everything laying out in front of you, you know.
Tastefully done.
It's very tastefully done. And actually, there's a part of it that I found absolutely freaking hilarious where the writer skips over the whole, like, everything like that. I'm going to have a hard time finding that section now. But basically, it's just like, you know, I can spend pages talking about, you know, what it is to orgasm, but it's been written in so many different ways by so many different people. Why are we wasting the space?
So
it's very tastefully like, okay, we're going to skip this and we're going to go on to what happened next, you know?
I mean, is it listed as an adult book? It's not even.
I don't see that it was listed as an adult book, honestly.
It's image.
It does show nudity, absolutely. Oh, yeah. So, you know, this isn't one you're going to run out
and the back it says rated M for mature, right?
Mature, okay. So, yeah, it's definitely not something you got to run out and get the kiddies to read right now.
No.
I don't know if kids would be interested in that one, though.
They wouldn't. The kids wouldn't be interested because, as I said, this is a love story. This isn't an action series. This isn't, at least, I mean, I finished volume 1. It's not an action series yet. I highly doubt it's going to become one. But it's very tastefully written, very intelligently written as well. Not to mention
While I haven't read 50 Shades of Grey, I understand that that book is a load of bullshit when it comes to BDSM relationships. This actually touches on some very core concepts of that lifestyle. The idea of safe, sane, consensual, safe words. It talks about aftercare and everything. So it's a very, very well written book, and I'm enjoying the crap out of the first volume. I can't wait to get to the next one.
Well, you said when we came in, you said I'm going to show this, but we won't really talk about the show. And I thought, well, why not?
I wasn't sure how appropriate.
No, I appreciate what you're saying, and I agree with you. But I'm looking through this, the art style. The first thing I said to Al was, this reminds me of reading heavy metal in the 70s. I mean, yeah. They used to have stuff like it, but at the same time, it's drawn in a more modern style. It's got like, when I say this carefully, it's got a manga look to it, but it's an American style. But it goes with the story, and even though it does show, you know, graphic things, it's basically a conversation and talking about a relationship. And it wasn't, when I say that, it wasn't like the stuff in heavy metal where it just went over the top and it's like somebody's bad wet dream or something. I didn't read the series, but the story seems to flow well, and it looks fantastic.
Yeah.
I can see where it would be controversial.
Yeah. Well, and this is the same person that worked on a series like Witchblade, The Darkness. So, you know, this isn't somebody new. I'm going to slaughter this name. I apologize. We'll get it right on the website so you guys can look up the name properly.
I see it right here.
Yeah. Anybody want to take a crack at this name?
Stepan Sedgwick.
Stepan Sedgwick.
Sounds good. Listen, nobody butchers names like I do, so it would have been worse if I would try to do it.
It reminds me a little bit of some. I think you have a copy. Remember. Maybe you don't. Penthouse Comics, they put them out. Like, I thought you had one in there.
I don't think I have a Penthouse comic. I have, remember in that old collection we talked about earlier, I have, like, the erotic comic book that ended up in there.
Yeah, so, like in the 90s, they used to put out, Fantagraphics had Eros, and they put out a bunch of adult.
Yeah, but this, I think, is done way more tastefully than those.
Well, no, some of those were tasteful. Some of them were rude. Some of them were the worst and the funniest and, like, the most, you know, off the wall with the Robert Crumb.
Oh God, Crumb was just.
Crumb did some of the
Crumb did whatever insane, the hell he wanted.
Insane things you've ever seen in your life in the 60s and 70s. So yeah, it's like
Even in the 80s,
even in the
90s
too. Yeah. But a lot of comic writers have changed their names and do some of the Eros comics, and then like even in Penthouse comics, like Tex did a strip in there. You know, there's a bunch of guys and I found a few of them that I had. I was like, oh, okay, you have something in there that's kind of like, I have to pull it out of there. It's kind of like in the something zone. It was a magazine that it was something
feel
zone.
Feel free to pull in and check it out.
Let me grab it here because I know I have it.
Yeah. But what I find interesting in the back of the, after this in the first volume here is that he talks about how he had just finished Witchblade. It was a comic that he loved and hated at the time. And he was just kind of, Forbidden Zone. Okay.
Isn't that kind of like a sexy book?
Is it? I don't remember.
I'll take a look
through that one. But he was talking about something that he just wanted to do, like, artistically. And, you know, apparently this all started out as just, like, a series of drawings. Like, just some conceptual
pieces. Well, you said it was on the internet, right?
It was a webcomic. A highly successful webcomic.
Not bad.
And, you know, everybody loved the crap out of it. Apparently, it was never meant for print, but then it ended up being printed, and yeah, they're at volume 5 now. It's Image Top Cow comic book.
Well, it translates well when you say that. I mean, I look at it; it looks like it was made for
comics. Oh yeah, okay. So yeah, Forbidden Zone is a bit of a adult book.
Yeah.
So, you got me. You know, some of those that drawer that you pulled from just now. For anybody listening, my entire collection has been transferred into two giant filing cabinets,
which is awesome.
Oh yeah, I absolutely love it, and. Al's pulling from a drawer that I really have not been able to catalog yet completely.
I mean, this has got like some fan. I remember this book. This has got Corbin in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Larry Stroman, who's an excellent artist. Peter Sue, I think was his name. Arthur Sydam is in this.
Who I love.
Now that's very. Forbidden Zone's a very heavy metal esque style book because
Mark Beecham.
It jumps. It does like pulp. It's all different storylines.
I don't know how many of these were, but I know I have this issue.
Yeah,
and it's very well drawn. And it's, yeah. But it's very you know adult or whatever. But again, you know, you could have gotten this at a newsstand back in the, I don't know, 90s or 80s or whatever. But yeah, but this was in the style of those Penthouse comics,
yeah.
Or whatever. But these are short stories. I mean, I think these were like continuing stories. But that's actually a comic book that follows like a graphic novel or
yeah.
Long form, whereas these were shorter form stories or whatever. It's upside down. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Okay.
Well, hopefully you'll send that to me for the image. But I'm just trying to remember some of these books.
Yeah.
You know this what's it called? Sunstone.
Sunstone.
That one. The second issue I like a little better. It's the same artist, but his drawing style kind of. The finish has got a little more refined and graphic in some ways. It's similar to the other one, but
yeah,
it seemed like either they're modifying some of it, or he's getting a little more flashy with it.
Yeah, I have not read anything in Volume 2 yet. So, I just finished Volume 1 this morning, probably about an hour or so before you guys got here, and then I was like, oh, hey, I need to get back to work on painting things.
You know, I have to say, every time we come over your place, you've got a project going on. Usually Billy's here helping you, but I take my hat off.
Yeah, this room was completely different like a couple of years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the room,
whole place is different a couple of years ago.
The room is heavily in progress at the moment. You know, like everything in the corner behind Don right now is just... not belong there. None of that actually belongs there. So we've removed the desk. We're going to build a breakfast nook, breakfast type nook reading area thing. You know, we're painting the cabinetry back here because I think at some point somebody intended this to be like a mother-in-law's apartment. Yeah, because I've noticed like there's some plumbing connections back here. Yeah. It seems like, you know, the alcove right back there is meant for a refrigerator. So I really think they were planning on either renting it out or in-law apartment or something to that nature. But yeah, no, it's really become the library that I always intended it to be. So
getting back to the book, I didn't know that genre of book was like still being, you know, made or whatever. I thought everything was pretty.
I think that's the interesting thing for a lot of people is the fact that, you know, they've, you know, for those who have been around comics for a long time, we've seen something kind of like this.
Always,
but it's. This is still a little bit different because they're not using any like great villains or anything like that. It's a romantic story really. So, but it's a lot of fun for, you know, people like me who, you know, have the interest in BDSM that, you know, it's being written in really a proper way. You know, it's not looking at it like, oh, look at the freaks. You know,
it's not like brown bag, raincoat crowd.
Well, you know, something to point out was back in when that whole Friendly Franks thing happened. And around here, there was a guy that did a book called Death Angel or something like that.
I think I remember.
Mike Diana.
Yeah, I remember Death Angel.
Yeah, and those things started, you know, coming down. Friendly Franks kind of destroyed everything. But, you know, I remember Dark Knight was coming out, the biggest thing. Guys like us were going into buying this. I couldn't wait for the next one. I remember going to comic stores and kids were asking about it. Of course, they wouldn't sell it to them. But, you know, it looked neat. And especially the later issues that had Batman in a robot suit fighting Superman. I mean, who wouldn't want to read that?
Yeah.
But this stuff here is what you just said. There's no fighting. It's two women. And it's not drawn in the style that a younger kid would want to read. You know,
teen boys and going through puberty would probably be all over this, but not for the right reasons.
Well, yeah, I mean, I could see some of it, but just looking at the covers.
Yeah, like, you look at these covers, and you're probably going to bypass this.
Yeah.
You know, and each one of the covers is this red design with characters on it.
And little contrast.
Yeah, yeah. So it's you know, it's really, really, really a great book that you know. Once again, I'm very thankful for the crew at Yancey, Kayla and Brittany, for you know, throwing this one at me.
Now, would you say if they didn't recommend it to you, you think you would have noticed this?
Totally
on the show?
Looked past it.
See, that's what I'm saying.
I would have completely looked right
when,
past
when
this
it.
Book.
When it was on the stands, there was it like bagged, or was it like only open for looking?
Well, no. This is do you know when you go into the shop and they've got the racks of independent books?
Yeah.
The graphic novels for this one are sitting right there on the shelf. And what's funny is you can tell that the girls are trying to feature this one because each volume is sitting, instead of stacked, each volume is sitting side by side.
But they weren't in a bag, too.
Nope.
Oh, boy.
No. Now, that's one thing I like about Yancey was when I go in there, everybody who works there, when I buy something, they seem to know something about it. And
yeah.
Not in the near... I've gone to some stores, I've said this before, where they're animated and they have to say something about every single book you get. I really don't care.
Yeah.
But that one, like, I bought Lowell recently, and it wasn't Brittany, it was that blonde girl that worked.
Kayla.
Like, yeah.
Yep.
But I was surprised. You go, oh, this is so nice. It's really... I bought it because I liked how it looked.
Yeah.
And she says, oh, this is really nice. I really liked the second one. But I was surprised. And then she didn't go on about it, but she read it.
Well,
she liked it.
That's one of the fun things about the two of them is, like, when I go in there, they'll go through my books, and they're like, oh, this one's good.
Yeah.
Let me know what you think when you get done. I want to talk to you. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. You know, or they'll go through my books checking me out, and they're like, hey, by the way, have you seen blah, 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 blah? It's on that we got last week or 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, oh, what is this? What are we talking about here? So,
I remember back in the 90s, my friend Britt, he bought a Comics Journal. That was back when comic stores were part of card stores and stuff. And Britt bought an issue of Comics Journal, and the guy behind the counter said, I didn't know they had a magazine about comics. In a comic shop! So, you know, I mean, this is just the opposite, but I don't know, I'm always impressed with it. By the way, on Lowell, I was surprised because I bought it, I've talked about it, I was going to get the second issue, and, you know, I've gave my whole feelings on the series. But whenever I go see my daughter, she's always got books like Bitch Planet stuff that she found, and she goes, Dad, read this. And, you know, I've read a bunch of first, second books that she's got and stuff. And I read them. Of course, you got to remember, limited time. I'm seeing my daughter. We're doing things. So I'm reading them on the fly. And I take a picture of each issue so we could talk about it. Well, I was wanting to talk about it with all four of us. I had a picture of Lowe. And I realized I read it at my daughter's, but I read it in a hurry. And then I bought it. And I told her, so you remember that book you got Lowe? And she couldn't remember, so I described it. Oh, yeah, that one. I didn't really like that one much. But I read it in South Carolina, forgot all about it, bought it at Yancey, read it, talked about it, and then realized later I had read it before.
Did you buy it twice?
No, she bought it. She had
it. She bought it, yeah.
And when I went
she
up to see it.
She bought it, didn't like it.
Well, I asked her about it because, you know, as I said on the show, it was really good, but some of it was confusing and kind of hard to read through, and Dallas had read parts of it, and he said the same thing. And when I talked to her, when I realized, like an idiot, that I had read it at her place, read the whole trade, but again, on the fly, you know, but she said, you know, I read a lot of it, but I just got to where I couldn't get through it. It was a confusing thing. But anyway, I don't mean to put the book down because I'm going to buy the second trade, but I just found it kind of odd.
That was a kind of mixed review, and then he's like, I'm buying the second one.
Well, it's
so
not a perfect
a good review.
It's not a perfect book, but it is a unique book, and I mean, I like it. It's not like I bought it, oh, God, I don't want this. It looks, visually, is second to none. The idea is fantastic. Some of the storytelling, I think some of it's because of the artwork, it gets confusing. And some of the reviews that I posted on the blog about it, the guy says, you know, he talks well about it. So if you want something that's confusing and hard to believe, but read, but beautiful, this is the book for you. And I kind of agree with it. But I don't know. If you're going to read something like that, take your time like I did the second time. And don't flash read it like you are when you're visiting your daughter in another state. All right. Well, I've got something to finish this out. I've always liked Japanese comics until the late 80s, they were impossible to get over here in the United States with a very limited thing, and usually it's about comic books about Hiroshima, you know.
It happened.
Yeah, it happened, and there was other ones like that, but I'd read about them. I remember some of the anime, like Prince Planet, we used to watch, and Marine Boy and stuff, which I loved. And but one thing I'd always read about was, you know, the boys' comics, which is what I was interested in, the giant robots, the superheroes, the fighting, martial arts stuff. They always talk about they had sports comics, which I always thought was kind of an odd thing to have until I started reading some of them. They're pretty good. Another one was comics for women and comics for girls, which, again, I wouldn't have touched those with a 10-foot pole. You know, okay, everything was wispy. Everything was about, you know, ladies and tears and this and that. Well, fast forward into the 90s and 2000s when, you know, Borders bookstores is around and manga is everywhere, and all the kids in middle school have manga books. And my daughter had a big collection, and she was reading these kind of books. And one of her favorites was a series called Hot Gimmick. And if you have a kid, you're going to read what they have to know what's going on. So when she'd read these, I'd read these as well. And I never thought I would have any interest in this, but it's about a girl that's growing up. Her father works for a company, and they're living in company housing. So there are big apartment complexes that everybody with the company is living in. I always hear people all the time in the 80s talk about Japanese companies, you know, have all these resorts they send the families to get away from and how nice it is, and they have company housing that, you know, you can live in. So it's always rosy sound there. Well, this one's more of a reality because they're talking about it. And basically, the highest up in the company working there, his family's in charge of the company housing. And it gets into a pecking order, and the guy's wife is a total nightmare. All the other housewives are falling all over him. And it gets to the point where her son likes this one girl.
Oh, boy.
And he's not...
Oh.
Yeah. Al always has to point that out.
Yeah. Oh,
sex
yeah.
scene. But anyway, whatever happens, she kind of turns the guy away. He gets upset about it. Next thing you know, the mother has all the women in the place treat them like they're lepers. And what's bad is she's got a little brother in preschool, and none of the other kids will play with him. He didn't understand why. And I God, thank God I don't live in company housing, you know. But it was a good series. What was bizarre was this guy that likes her, his father's in charge of this whole area. Her brother, older brother, which I guess is adopted, he doesn't look like any of them, he's with him. And he, it's kind of weird because she's having feelings for him. And there's something going on between him and the head guy in the place. Well, there's another student that shows up that looks exactly like her older brother. Well, as the story unfolds, you start finding out there's something to do with the guy in charge of the place having an affair with somebody's mother. And it's convoluted, it's weird, but it starts explaining, and the girl's so wispy and droopy all the time. She's letting people, she's got three guys basically telling her what to do and treating her bad. In the 11th issue, she starts to make out with her adopted brother, which kind of bothered me. It really bothered my daughter because she was reading these in middle school. She got so disgusted that the 11th issue was the last one she was going to get. Well, later I found out she read the 12th issue of Borders, and she said she didn't make out with her brother, even though they alluded it made it look like it, which is just creepy, even though it's not blood brother, but, you know, she grew up with him.
Weird.
But, anyway, she found this for $2 at a store in South Carolina and said, well, Dad, you need to finish it. So she sent it to me. I did finish it. One thing I'm going to say, it's kind of hard to keep track of the 12th book if you read 11 of them 8 years ago. But
you don't remember everything in the book you read 8 years ago?
Well, yeah. I remember them, but, you know, some of them, the Japanese names are, oh, here's the three guys. Yeah, the blonde one is... His family is the one that is in charge of the complex. This guy is the one that showed up to school, and that's her adopted brother, who's wanting his adoption annulled because of all things going on. But somehow these three are from the same father, and nobody knows it. You know, I'm not going to tell you the ending of it. One thing I was surprised reading this is that the ending of this story is just the first third of the book. Well, the other one is... extra stuff she drew or even other stories about some of the side characters. In this book, her younger sister gets in a relationship with a friend of hers that is older than all of them but seems younger. And it's just kind of, it reminds me of middle school a lot. It's very insightful and very, it's a good strip, but I was surprised. A lot of the books that my daughter was getting, these Japanese books, were the ladies' books, and I found them a lot more interesting in reading Astro Boy and, you know, some of the books I thought I'd like better, the robots and the fighting. Maybe it was because I'm older, maybe because I have a daughter, but not too bad. Not too bad. But anyway, it was a book I really liked, but again, the 11th issue kind of made it crash and burn to me, and the 12th one, even though I finally found out what happened, it's not like it made my life richer. So
I always wondered, I mean, I just, it's a stylistic thing, why the manga characters look the way they do. Who's the template for that style, you know? I mean, is there an artist like Tezuka or somebody like that started drawing, and that's kind of style that they all kind of follow, and most of them follow in a way.
Yeah, they really do. They really do all follow a basic, very
like the big eyes and the other cartoony thing. I always wondered who was the template for it.
Well, I just know that Bat Manga book that I was talking about.
Yeah,
there was a brief interview with the guy. He was the one that created Eight Man.
Oh yeah, Eight Man.
But he did the Batman stuff in Japan, and he said when they were interviewing him, you know, he did comics, a lot of them did comics, but he upped his game when Tezuka started. He said when they started seeing what Tezuka did, it changed. They all kind of jumped in and did it. But I don't think he's the one that created that style. I think he just basically, like Jack Kirby didn't invent comics, but man, when he did them, he changed everything. So Tezuka changed it, but I don't know. I'm guessing that was just some of the exaggerated stuff the Japanese like.
I was just wondering.
Because you got that Tezuka style, I always call it, but then later, in the 70s, you start getting that thinner line, wispy, you know, manga character they have now, and now it's gotten to be more of...
And then you got the Lomo from Cub guy that's a little bit different.
Yeah, which is awesome. That's some of my absolute favorite. I listen
awesome.
To absolutely awesome. It's on my reading list. On my reading list. I'm telling you, it's one of the greatest series in the whole planet. And if you do want to read Lone Wolf and Cub, I highly recommend it. They're in all those books, but you don't have to start from the small trades that they made. That first book, I loved it, but I probably wouldn't have liked it if I would have started the series off on those. You can start anywhere in that series. It's awesome. And then if you liked it that much, you can go back to the first one, and it's just more to read. But, yeah, that's great.
Right.
Anyway, nice. That's about time. Oh, man. Conversation just flowed, and we came in thinking we didn't have anything to talk about. Anything you want to finish with?
Coming up to episode 200.
Yeah, I was telling Dallas, I says, well, it's a while. We're getting close to 200, so we're trying to decide what we're going to do. It'll be with the Core 4, as always. I guess that's about it. If you got anything to say, we got the Facebook group, we got the Facebook page, and now we have all of our contact information. If you get a chance, please leave us a review or a rating in iTunes. It really helps us out. And if you'd like to subscribe through iTunes or Stitcher Radio, it really helps us out. And please tell a friend if you like the show. Maybe they will, too. Thanks for listening. In the meantime,
read more comics.
You can find Al's other podcast, Slow Robot A-Go-Go, Dallas's webcomic, The Mighty Blue, and Al's blog, Destination Nightmare, on the sidebar of our blog at bunchofdorks.com.
And click on the Cyclops!
My name is Mao, and with me as always...
Dr. Morbius?
From Parts Unknown.
Question mark?
This is the promo for Slow Robot A-Go-Go, the B through Z grade movie review podcast.
Yes, B through Z. You know what that means, kids?
Mostly Z grade.
That's right.
If that's obscure and you've never heard of it and it's horrible, we're your men. We're your men. We're here to...
We're the dudes.
We're the dudes that are going to review it and talk about it. And you're going to be like, why would they talk about that? And we don't know either.
And then you're going to want to run out and get these movies and pay big money, Blu-ray money to get these movies because they're all great and you're all going to love them.
We're waiting for that phone call, Criterion. If you want a hungover idiot and a guy who knows a lot about movies that no one's ever heard of,
who's another idiot too.
We're your men. We're here for you, man.
We're the usual gang of idiots.
But anyway, go to bunchofdorks.com. Click on the first button. That's Slow Robot A Go Go, and then you're gonna hear all about B movies that you never knew existed.
That's right.
And then click the other buttons for fun and enjoyment.
Two dimension button, which is what we're on now. Comic books. And all that other good stuff. Go to Radio St. Pete. We got other podcasts on there, too.
We got crazy podcasts out the wazoo. We've lost our minds.
Hey, lady!
Oh, no.